Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Theme songs sound familiar to you? Spoiler alert, it was Friends, Frasier, and Seinfeld in that order. It's like they transport you back to the must-see TV era of the 90s. I can't complain about that. Welcome to CNN's The Rewind. It's a podcast that takes you back in time and shows you how CNN covered the people and events of the past that still impact our world today. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira, and in this episode, we're going to talk about one of my, and I'm also betting, your favorite topics. 90s TV, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, The Simpsons, Seinfeld, Beverly Hills 90210, Buffy, The Vampire Slayer. There was a must-see show for every generation and every genre. For me, it was all about ER, A Different World, and NYPD Blue.
You're huggable as a porcupine, except for which one, you got an admirable work ethic.
Thanks, Sarge.
90s TV was so good. In fact, we're still watching it today. More than 20 years later, Twin Peaks has returned on Showtime. Full House has a Netflix spinoff. And The Simpsons is still on the air with that bad little boy, Bart Simpson. So what made 90s TV so special? Well, first of all, most of us had at least one TV in the home. And we had the basic broadcast channels, NBC, ABC, Fox, and CBS. In addition, cable TV was taking off like a rocket. All my 90s babies listening probably can recall being raised by Nickelodeon. Am I right?
Nickelodeon!
But the classic 90s TV, all those fan favorites that I listed earlier, those shows were on regular old broadcast TV. Everyone with a TV could have access to those programs. Now, it's really important to remember the time we were living in the 90s. This was well before streaming. We didn't get the ability to digitally record a TV show to watch it later or fast forward through the commercials until the end of the decade. No, in the 90s, we scheduled our lives around the listings that came in the TV guide. You either watched your show when it aired live, or you risked trying to record it with the old VCR, which half the time meant you recorded the wrong thing entirely, and or you recorded over your sister's dance recital by accident. The struggle was real, I assure you. But in all seriousness, this technical Stone Age actually created something kind of special during that time, a community. Think about it. When Fresh Prince came on NBC at 8 p.m. on Monday nights in 92, nearly 15 million American households were tuned in to the exact same program at the exact same time. Imagine everyone from Beverly Hills to West Philadelphia laughing together at jokes about a fish-out-of-water jokester living with his upper-crust family. I distinctly remember trying to be home for must-see TV Thursday nights on NBC. They could not be missed. 90s TV connected people. This is especially true of high-rated sitcoms, things like Seinfeld. Seinfeld was so popular, 76 million people watched its series finale in 1998. The Cheers spinoff Frasier started in 1993. It ended the decade with roughly 20 million viewers. And of course, there's Friends, the comedy that averaged 29 million viewers at its peak in the mid-90s and is considered by many to be the iconic sitcom of the decade. These shows were so popular that they made the news and made it onto Larry King's show on CNN. Larry had a big question for the cast of each of these shows. Well, he had more than that, but this is what he really wanted to know. What made these shows so astonishingly popular, and how did they do it? Here's what he heard from the stars he brought on his show. We'll start with comedian Jerry Seinfeld in 1991, 2 years after the launch of Seinfeld.
He is a stand-up kind of guy. Jerry Seinfeld is becoming a household name as TVs around the country are tuning in to Seinfeld Thursday nights. And it's a great pleasure to welcome him back to Larry King Live. You're a hit.
Thank you.
Did you? How did the show originate? Did you go to them and say, I got an idea to do a show?
No. My manager sent Brandon Tartikoff a note that said, call me a crazy guy. I have a feeling Jerry Seinfeld's going to be doing a TV series for you. And he thought that was funny. And so they called us in and we talked about, you know, would you like to do something? I said, absolutely not. I have no ideas, and I just would like to have a meeting. You know, just
you wanted a meeting in Tartikoff, right?
Right.
Just to say, I had a meeting.
So then I had coffee with this friend of mine in New York, who's also a comedian, Larry David. And I told him about this meeting. I said, I had this great meeting at NBC, and all these guys were there, and they said, you know, you could do something. And I said, that's great, but I don't know what to do. So he said, you know, we should do a show about, because people always ask you, where do you get your ideas, and what's it like being a comedian? So I wanted to do a thing about the offstage life of a comedian, and who better than me? So that's it.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, we thought we could finally see these movies like Punchline and stuff, and it's not like what it's like being a comedian. You know, I know what it's like, and he knows what it's like, so we could do it.
Now that you've got this show, does it mean you no longer have to do what it's like?
I want to do it. That's what I love.
Understand.
Yeah. No, the sitcom is it's great. I love doing it, and as long as it lasts. But I'm a comedian. This is a sideline.
That sideline became a multi-million dollar business by the time it went off the air in 1998 after 9 seasons. And even if you weren't a Seinfeld fan, you know about Festivus, the Soup Nazi, and of course, yada, yada, yada.
I've yada, yada'd sex.
Really?
Yeah. I met this lawyer. We went out to dinner. I had the lobster bisque. We went back to my place. Yada, yada, yada. I never heard from him again.
But you yada, yada'd over the best part.
No, I mentioned the bisque.
Now, Jerry Seinfeld wouldn't admit it at the time, but when he did this interview with Larry King in November of 1997, he was just months away from Seinfeld's series finale. Unlike what happened with another huge 90s show, Cheers, there wouldn't be any spinoffs.
When a show gets into 9 years, aren't there some people around saying, we should start a little more this? Let's send him there. Let's bring in this girl.
Not with this show, because it is so inventive. I think the writers come up with such inventive ideas. I mean, just like this one we're talking about.
That's inventive.
You know, it's totally unusual. So no one says, well, we need to break out of this, because there's nothing we're inside to break out of. There's no place on the show. There's nothing on the show that happens every week, except I meet a girl and it doesn't work out. But that's my life anyway.
9 years cast intact.
Yeah, and the creator of the show, one of the creators, still doing all the rewrites.
Explain. I mean, that's just against every known.
I think what happens, most of these guys, when they get a show going, they get a production deal from the network and put like 3 more shows on the air. And I never wanted to be a TV producer. You know, I just want to tell jokes. So I just wanted to stay with this show. But yeah, that the cast has stayed, and because everyone has had a good time.
Obviously.
You know, and the audience has supported us.
How about spinoff offers, though?
Yeah, thanks.
Well,
I mean, you've got characters that you could say you could build a show around.
But that's what's great about the show is that each person gets to star each week. I mean, we do 4 stories, 1 for every character every week. And it's the best material that they're going to get. I mean, you see the material out there and you see some of the things that are available. No one's looking to get off of this show.
Kramer, he's just a dentist.
Yeah, and you're an anti-dentite.
I am not an anti-dentite.
You're a rabid anti-dentite. Oh, it starts with a few jokes and some slurs. Hey, denty! Next thing you know, you're saying they should have their own schools.
They do have their own schools.
Yet your last time on this show, you said this is your last year.
I didn't say that.
No, you said when you leave, you will not do a sitcom again.
That's true.
And you will go do stand-up comedy.
That is true.
Which you miss.
Yes, that is true.
Are you looking for a 10th year definite? I mean, is that...
I haven't decided.
Is it strictly your decision? Is there any option to the
I don't know how they're going to do it without me.
but
it's not strictly mine. I like to get the feeling of the cast and the writers and where it's at creatively. To me, it's the most important thing is that the show reach its creative peak and not hang around just because it's become a TV habit.
So just as Jerry predicted, Seinfeld ended at its creative peak in 1998. There have been no spinoffs despite the popularity of Jerry, Kramer, Elaine, and George. But another 90s TV favorite had its origins in a super popular 80s show. Remember Cheers? The show about a Boston bar where everybody knows your name? Fun fact for you, I got to sling beer at the Boston bar named Cheers. Very cool. So Cheers ended its run in 1993 with more than 80 million people watching its send-off. I remember that day distinctly. With that kind of fan base, it's not a surprise that NBC wanted to keep the Cheers love going. And so, the same year that Cheers left the air, we got to know a man named Frasier a little better. We'll talk about all of that after a short break. Welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. So we've been talking about some of the greatest hits of 90s TV. And no list of top 90s TV shows can be trusted if it does not include a mention of Frasier. The NBC comedy was a rare spinoff that actually worked. It starred Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Frasier Crane, a psychiatrist who relocates from Boston and its famous bar Cheers all the way west to Seattle, his hometown. There, he hosts a call-in radio show while taking care of his dad with the help from a British caretaker and his younger brother, Niles Crane. For the uninitiated, this may sound like kind of a mundane or unimpressive plot for a comedy, but critics loved it, and the viewership was strong, too. During its 11 seasons on television, Frasier racked up 37 Primetime Emmy Awards, making it one of the most successful TV comedies to date. In honor of its 100th episode in November of 1997, the cast joined Larry King to share some of the secrets to their success.
Let me introduce the cast. Kelsey Grammer, who plays Dr. Frasier, David Hyde Pierce, who is Dr. Niles Crane, Kelsey's brother. Jane Leaves, Daphne Moon is her part. She is Frasier's father's caretaker. Perry Gilpin is Roz Doyle, Frasier's producer. And last but not least, Bob Bulldog Briscoe, the radio sports jock. For a little history, Kelsey,
yes.
Spinoffs sometimes work, sometimes don't. This is a spinoff, is it not?
Well,
Cheers.
Yeah,
takes
I mean,
a character and gives him a show.
I think it's a spinoff just in name only, though, really, because we made a conscious effort to have it be as far removed from Cheers as it possibly could be.
But that character had to be popular enough so that it was an entree to say, let's do him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Did you like it right away, the idea?
Well, actually, originally the show was the show that we were working on was not a Frasier show. It was about a guy that ended up in a bed all the time because he'd had a motorcycle accident, and he was sort of going to run his empire through this multimedia connection thing that he had. And then John Pike, who was the then president of Paramount Television, said, I just don't think a guy in a bed is funny.
Need a lot of movement.
Which is funny. It's actually, we deliberately did that first year a whole show where Frasier was in bed just to sort of prove our point. But then we realized that, yes, probably not everybody.
So the idea of Seattle, which is where you go for this 100th show, and we'll get to that. We'll be showing you a lot of clips tonight. The idea of a psychiatrist going to Seattle, having a talk show, etc., all that is a distant play on
a
spinoff.
Yes, exactly. It was actually to distance us from the whole Boston thing, even geographically as well. I mean, pretty much diametrically opposed to the other side of the country.
How did you come on, David?
I paid them a lot of money, and they said, oh, all right.
Payoffs still work.
Yeah, it does, it does. Sure. It's a very important part of our culture and our political
world.
It
was an easy role, right? A lot of people could have did it. Why not pay?
That's right. No, you know, the main reason was I looked like him. And that was the first thing. They brought me in because I looked like him. And we talked for about 20 minutes, and they said, oh, okay, and they put me on the show. That was it.
did you think this is going to be a hit? Do you think that way?
I had been on a show on NBC before. That was a great cast and great scripts, and I really loved it, and it got canceled. And
what show?
It was called The Powers That Be. Mm. No one knows. It doesn't matter. But it was... we liked it. But I made two vows. One, I would never do another sitcom, and if I did, it certainly wouldn't be on NBC.
Well, then.
No.
So much for your resolve.
But so I had no hopes. I just thought, you know, I like these people and I like the script, and it turned out okay.
Did you think it would be a hit?
No. No, did I not. No preconception.
No
at all.
Chance.
Actually, I did, yeah.
You did. You were confident.
I really did, yeah. I thought, after all this time and this great cast and with all the people that we had assembled, I thought, certainly the best people in the business I've ever heard of. It can't fail.
How did Miss Leaves come aboard?
I came in and read with Kelsey, mm-hmm. And pretty much was hired on the spot.
Yes, pretty much. It's true. Although my wife at the time was very, very worried about it.
Did they
definitely want someone of a British nature?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, they'd written the script, the sides that I had as a British woman, mm-hmm. from Manchester, and I think actually I was a suggestion of Warren Littlefield's.
I don't really know.
I'm
yeah,
not
they
really
said
sure.
something about
yeah.
Jane Leaves. They yeah. said, "What about her? We like her." Yeah, yeah.
What had you done a lot of TV work?
I'd done quite a bit. Yes, the sort of pilot every year for about 8 years, and recurred on. You know,
the odds are against you.
Doos is in there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
did you? Did you think? David thought not. Kelly thought yes. Did you think this would be a hit?
Oh gosh. Well, I knew we had all the elements there. I mean, a great cast, a great writing. Everything seemed to gel from the beginning, but you know,
who knows?
We did have a good time slot at the
we
time
did,
too.
Yes.
Yeah, we came on it
when
after
I heard
Seinfeld.
That, yeah,
not, well, that means they love you.
Yes,
gonna put your,
yeah.
Yeah. Not going to put a dumb show.
And then they, well,
Harry, how did you come into this group?
In a very interesting way, I auditioned from with the casting director, Jeff Greenberg. I love to say Jeff's name.
Yes, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
We owe him everything,
and,
really.
And I met with Kelsey. I met the producers who were old friends. And then I actually did not get cast. And about 5 days into the pilot, I came back into the show, which I was so grateful for and happy about. And so I've been with it ever since.
You did not get cast originally?
No, not originally.
Someone else did.
What happened to her?
She went on
to fame and fortune on the show called Friends.
Yeah. She did, Lisa Kudrow.
So there's no sadness.
Not at all, no.
What would you say to someone who had never seen Frasier? This show is about...
Well, first of all, I would say, what is your problem?
That's right.
That you have never seen
after
Frasier.
After the examination.
After that, right. I would say it's about a bunch of dysfunctional people who really love each other and really try to do their best.
Who are doing their best to get by in life.
And will make you laugh till you pee.
Did you catch what actress Perry Gilpin, who of course played Frasier's radio producer Roz on the show, said about her casting? Her part was originally given to Lisa Kudrow. But Kudrow, of course, was destined to become famous on another NBC sitcom for playing the role of Phoebe on Friends. Kudrow and the cast of Friends joined Larry King for a sit-down interview at the height of the show's popularity in 1997, although it was kind of obvious that Larry didn't watch the show.
Charles, played by Matthew Perry, is having a very inconvenient...
Charles?
Chandler. Lisa Kudrow, who is Phoebe. It's Kudrow, right? Richard, you have a favorite?
Or David.
Ouch! All right, we're going to head for a cup at Central Perk right after this break. All right, welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. TV fans, I am your host, Michaela Pereira, and now we're getting to the 90s sitcom that stands out as one of the 90s of all shows, the simply named Friends. Created by Marta Kaufman and David Crane, the concept is as uncomplicated as a plain old cup of black coffee. Six 20-somethings who form a friendship while trying to build a life in New York City. But as we all know very well from our own lives, those first years of true adulthood, a bit of a minefield of mistakes. Sometimes the only people that you can count on to help you get through those rough patches are your friends. It's that relatability that made Friends different and what makes it so popular today. In March of 1997, when Friends was in its third season and Ross and Rachel were on the first of many of their breakups, Larry King sat down with the cast in L.A. to talk about how this unassuming show became a hit.
They are the cast of Friends. They're Courtney Cox, who plays Monica Geller, David Schwimmer, who plays Ross Geller, her brother,
Jennifer Aniston, who plays Rachel Green, Matthew Perry, who plays Chandler Bing, Lisa Kudrow, who plays Phoebe Buffay, and Matt LeBlanc, who plays Joey Tribbiani. Let's find out from each of you, starting with Matt. How did you get on this show?
Well, I auditioned about, I guess, 5 or 6 times, and just it was the script, the most buzz about this project more than any of the other half hours that were going around. And I just went in and in and in and in and in again and came out on top.
There was a lot of buzz about this, though. I mean, in other words, there was talk this was going to go.
This was the one, yeah.
All right. How did you get the part, Courtney?
I got it the same way I auditioned for it, and they actually had wanted me for another part on the show. And
which one?
Rachel's part. Huh. Rachel. And I'll call you Rachel for the rest of my life now. Jennifer's part. I wanted to play the part of Monica, so I had to switch their opinion and tell them that I could do this other part.
Why did you want Monica?
You know, I ask the same question now myself. No, I don't.
Since she's gotten so big with this part, right?
No, I wanted to play Monica because I thought that for me, I just connected with her in a certain way, and I was going to play Rachel just very neurotic and not as like ethereal and quirky.
Did you know it would be a hit too? I'm like, did you hear the buzz?
Well, I knew it was good. I don't know if I...
You can't never predict a hit, right?
No, I just knew it was really good, and it was different, and there were 6 interesting characters.
Your story any different, Lisa?
Mine is a story of a lovely lady who was busy with 3...
Good.
Sorry,
good.
You said story. Not that different.
Called you in, you auditioned.
Called me and I auditioned. And
had you heard the same buzz Matt had heard?
Yeah, I was told this is the one you want to do.
And you have to audition many times for something like... Do you know your competitors
sure.
when you're auditioning? Do you know?
I did. I certainly recognized everyone that was reading for this part and thought they were much better than me for it.
So you didn't think you would get it?
No.
David?
Yes.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Your story. Your saga.
My version. I guess I was doing a play in Chicago, and my agents in Los Angeles said I should come out for this audition, and so I did, and it happened to be the same creators of this pilot I had auditioned for a year prior and did not get, but I guess they remembered me, and later I guess they...
Did you have to do a lot of reading?
No, I met with them, talked about it, and read with the director of the pilot, Jim Burrows, and the executive producers, and then and so they offered me the part. And
Jennifer?
Yeah. Well, pretty much the same way, I guess. It was sort of last minute. I was on another show at the time.
Which one?
It was called Muddling Through. And it was, so I hadn't been able, I wasn't able to audition for anything. But this one was sort of looking iffy all of a sudden. So, and it came up very last minute. It happened in a matter of, I guess, 3 days.
After they decided that Courtney was...
And I hadn't even heard about it. Yeah, and they wanted me to read for Monica. And I remember saying...
They wanted me to read for Monica, too.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
No more of that.
That's right, enough.
That was a very smart choice.
But you're a boy, David.
So... Did you have to do a lot of reading, too? A lot of...
So I went in... Well, they were down to the crunch, so I went in, I think, twice, and then it happened. Sort of the fastest job I'd gotten.
Who informs you? Your agent?
Who makes...
He's the call that says, you got it. And then you jump up and down. What's your reaction?
I jumped up and down.
You jumped up and down.
Or sometimes you're sitting down, so you squirm or something.
And Matthew, do you have a different story?
I have a similar story to Jennifer. I was sitting.
Don't copy me.
I have a similar story to Jennifer. I was doing another show, and I wasn't available to do this show. And then the producers, a friend, saw the show that I had done and thought, well, this is about as bad as it gets.
What show was that?
It was called LAX 2194, and it was about baggage handlers in the year 2194.
Okay, go on. But they liked what you did in that, right?
They liked what I did in that.
That was the key.
Yes, but it was. It was about, I sorted out aliens luggage.
And they said, you're the guy for this role.
Yeah, and I read for the producers on a Wednesday, and I read for the studio on Thursday, and then the network on Friday, and then we started work on Monday.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Is anyone in shock over the success of this?
Yeah.
You all are?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, you never know when a show is going to be a hit as good as you think. I mean, you have your initial gut feeling, but networks are so fickle, and you never know what is a guaranteed hit. So.
Let's try to figure out why.
All right.
Let's go around. Why do you think, Matt, this show is successful? Yourself excluded. If you could leave yourself out a minute, because you're part of it, so that's hard. Why do we watch this?
Leave myself out. Okay, because they're really great.
Yeah, but but there are a lot of talented people working in a lot of talented in a lot of series that aren't good or that don't. What's special about Friends?
I think that because the characters are so different from one another, when you watch it, everybody seems to be able to identify with one or more characters, and the camaraderie that we have between each other, we try and really make it as real as we can, you know, like you are with your friends, and I think that, you know, helps to make a broad appeal.
Anyone add to that? Realism, a big part of it, right?
Yeah,
the writing.
Got to have good writing. It begins with the writing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the rehearsal process. I mean, I had never, in the shows that I've done, I had never been on a show where rehearsal time was actually used for rehearsal. I mean, it wasn't just sort of putting your putting you here, you move down here on that line, you move here on that. I mean, you break it down and work on it, and you just make it better each day. The writers just rehash and rehash up until the very last minute. They're finding things that don't work and making them better.
These six actors admit they weren't friends in the beginning, but by this point, they genuinely had developed a bond with one another, so much so that they all renegotiated as a group for higher salaries when their contracts were up for negotiation in 1996. As a team, they threatened to boycott the show if their salary demands weren't met, creating a huge scandal at the time. Here's how they explained it to Larry King.
You are all friends.
We were not friends, but we really truly are now.
You socialize?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You will go out there, you'd have a date, and you can go with her on a date? I mean, you could go...
You mean double date?
Yeah, double date. Yeah. Travel again.
It gets awkward because she eyes me, you know, in ways that really make me uncomfortable, considering she has a boyfriend and everything. But other than that...
But you've handled it well. Yeah. I think on this show, though, you may lose it tonight.
Yeah.
This could be the finish.
I may have just ruined it right there.
But what about when you took the bad raps for wanting more money? Or did you take bad raps? Am I just assuming that?
I think there was a lot of... Here's the deal with that. It became so blown out of proportion, the whole renegotiation thing. The bottom line is that every single show on their third year renegotiates. That's just what happens. It doesn't matter what show it is, it just happens. And there was never an awkward moment between the producers and the cast ever. It just never was.
There was no stalk-offs, no...
No.
No, it was a really strange feeling to drive
in. No, I'm not going to work.
No, we went to work every single day. Yes, there were cameras there the first day we pulled in to make sure, and it was just so blown up. It's just a natural thing that happens. And we negotiated, and that's what happens, and everybody's happy, and we're done.
All your agents negotiated individually. You didn't go as a group, did you, Matt? Or did you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It was very important that we all...
So you're all paid the same.
Yes. But know this. Everyone wanted us to go as a group. As far as the show, it's not... I mean,
it wasn't like
we
us
are
against
them. It wasn't like we're going to...
There was never any banging of tables and screaming and yelling and like as was reported.
No.
Was it reported that there was banging on tables?
Well, it made it seem like some press made it seem like you were going to walk.
There's been some unbelievable things said.
But was it difficult for you reading wrong things about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating some of the things that people will write about it. That was the toughest thing about it, was it played out in the press, you know. It was...
And people started, being very... were angry at, you know, and...
People were angry at you for wanting more money in a field where success is rewarded by money.
The natural progression of things.
Why did you make of anger, Matt? Why do you think they were mad?
I don't know. I mean, I tried to not really pay much attention to the way it was played out in the press, and we all sort of kept our heads together throughout the whole thing.
Sports writers get mad when ball players make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Right? I guess that goes with the territory. Were you shocked at it, David?
What, at the
reaction?
Yeah, it was hurtful. I mean, to be honest, I mean, the six of us were like, wow, why is there such a backlash? Why is there so much negative press about us asking? It's like asking for a raise from your boss.
And you got press saying you were the most reluctant, right, to give in. You were the toughest.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. No, I think we were all, from the beginning, we were a group, a solid group, and we all wanted to be paid equally, and that was the thing we were stressing from the beginning, that we didn't want to have, you know, divisive salaries.
At the start, were you paid differently?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
So one of the things you were asking for was, we're six people, we all want the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the end, the cast members of Friends saw their salaries collectively increase. In fact, by the time the show ended with season 10, they were all earning $1 million an episode. Diehard Friends fans might tell you that money is well paid, as you'll find episodes of this series in practically every place you look. Reruns constantly playing on cable TV. You can even now binge watch all 10 seasons of Friends on Netflix. That means even those of you who weren't born yet when the world was first introduced to Ross, Rachel, Joey, Chandler, Monica, and Phoebes probably now have a favorite Friends episode. Let's listen to what the Friends cast said were their favorites back in 1997.
Well, let's take a call. Pittsburgh, hello.
Hi, I'm a big fan of the show, and I was just wondering if each of you has a favorite episode.
Good question. Matt?
Wow.
While Matt thinks, Lisa.
I have the same problem. There are three different stories for every show, so I don't even know what episode, what story was in what. What.
Yeah, it's like one long episode.
Okay, yeah. Courtney has a favorite.
My favorite is the football episode.
Oh, that was a
really
that's your
was
favorite
a
one, really?
Well, I can only remember that one, right? But I'd like to.
Yours, Matthew?
I think my favorite one still is it's from the first season. It's when we were all in a blackout in New York City.
Yeah. That was a great one.
Yeah, that's my favorite one still, because that was that just felt like a little mini movie. It was written so well. It was great.
Jennifer?
I'd have to say the same. I love the one with the blackout, and also the one with the. What was it called? Laundry, the East German laundry detergent? When we were all on dates, he was trying to break up with Janice, and we were just meeting, and yeah, that was fun.
Richard, you have a favorite?
Or David. I think my favorite is probably...
Where
did Richard come from?
My brother's name and my father's name.
I don't know where Richard came from.
I don't either.
You know what? Just then, you look like a Richard. Actually, that's a big part for you if you drink away from the 6 feet.
Oh, really?
It's okay. A big part for you. Big show. An hour drama series. They want you. Don't want that.
No, that's great. That's great.
You have to change your name to Richard.
Well, I'll tell you, Steve. I'll tell you. My favorite part was probably... The one with the poker I liked a lot because it was an episode that all six of
like
us...
Like he knows. He doesn't even know your name.
Keep it up, man. Yeah, you know, I work nights, too. Somebody has to work.
The one with all the poker was the one with when all six of us were in one room for, like, the entire episode.
It was really, are the ones we're all really thinking great. Of.
Is it difficult, by the way, for guests who come on the show when you come into a cast that's worked together?
Is it hard for them?
It
is.
I'm sure it's hard.
Do it.
Yeah. Well, we were talking. Sorry. You go ahead.
No.
Okay. We were talking about these episodes are all the interesting thing is what you were going to say. And the interesting thing about all these episodes we're mentioning is the six of us in this kind of in a situation in a room together being funny. There was one this year where it's just the six of us getting ready to leave. That was the whole show, and that's when we have the most fun. And I think that that's when the show is the best.
And that fun that week.
Oh,
yeah.
Injury.
What, you got hurt?
Dislocated my shoulder.
Yeah, I tripped. Tripped. Dislocated my shoulder.
Austin, Texas, hello.
Hi. My question is for David and for Jennifer. Are Ross and Rachel going to make it?
Richard? Well...
Sorry.
Oh, Richard? Yeah, well, we don't know. The truth is the writers...
Well, you're broken up, right?
Yeah, we just broke up.
Yeah, the writers don't tell us everything that's going to happen on the show.
They know that we'll talk about it.
Yeah, and
how far ahead are you now into the season?
We're about three episodes in general. We're about three or four.
So in the next 3 weeks, she's not going to see you back together.
We don't know. We honestly have no idea.
But you know in the next 3 weeks it ain't going to happen.
No. I can't even remember what we shot Friday. No, I'm kidding.
No, we know this week
We have no idea what next week will. We have no idea what the story is going to be.
Yeah.
We just
so they might even introduce new people.
They
is that
might.
A possibility? They might.
Definitely.
Of course, we know what happened with Ross and Rachel, but it's cute to see at the time that the actors playing them clearly had no idea, absolutely no idea, how long that relationship would last. So I don't know about you, but I'm betting that we're all in the mood to go watch a few episodes of these 90s comedies. That'll be a wrap for us on this episode of CNN's The Rewind. But for more on the decade that we cannot get enough of, visit cnn.com/the90s. Until next time.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.